The next award, and one that is always very important to Listowel Writers Week, is the Writing in Prisons.
This is the Listowel Writers Festival, and it's June 2023. Pat has just won the prison writing competition at the festival for the second year running. He'd been granted temporary release from Lochan House Prison so that he could come collect the award in person.
I haven't been this nervous since the morning I got locked up. I'm actually more nervous now than I was then. That line is probably a first for the Listowel Writers Festival. I'd just like to thank you all for having me here this evening. It really is a truly humbling experience. I'm 54 years old and, you know, not all of my life has been an entirely honest journey. I wouldn't be where I was if it was. I won't go into detail, but my life has been largely controlled by a pretty hideous gambling addiction, which has caused me to go down paths that I didn't really want to go down. And, you know, it was an inevitability that I'd end up in prison. This time 3 years ago, I was a complete mess. I was mentally destroyed. I disgraced myself, my family, my friends. I financially harmed other people to feed my addiction. Physically, I was morbidly obese to the point that I couldn't even climb those three steps. I didn't think I had a future. I was in a treatment centre in 2010, and when I was leaving the treatment centre, the addiction counsellor told me that she told me I'd lived a fascinating life and that there was a book in me someday. And it's something that kind of sat with me for 10 years. And I decided that I'm not doing anything for the next 3 years, and I may as well give it a go. So I did. And, you know, it took off. It was the hardest thing I did in many ways, but it was definitely one of the best things I've ever done. From a personal point of view, if nobody ever reads it, it opened up my eyes to a lot of things about my life, and because of it, I'm in a far better place today than I have ever been. It took me 54 years to get there, but hopefully I have a bit to go yet. I haven't got long left in prison, and, you know, for a long time I was very worried about what the future would hold for me. You know, my outlook on life is completely different now, thanks to the help that I've got in prison, from the education units in prison, and the encouragement that I've got from them to be here today. I'm babbling now, so I'm just going to shut up and thank you all very much.
What an absolutely remarkable and truly humbling story. I think we'll all be pre-ordering the book. Congratulations.
From Wine Tavern Productions, in association with Go Loud, this is The Gambler, Episode 8, 100 to 1.
How long have you been out now?
Been out since the 9th of August, so 3 weeks. 3 weeks today, yeah. 21 days. It's just a strange kind of feeling, not having to go back there. Kind of think about it a lot, think about what's going on up there, what are people doing, who's doing what, who's doing this. Yeah, look, I was on an experience, wasn't it?
What's been the most difficult part of that transition then?
It's hard to say. I suppose you have a lot of kind of self-doubt. Mentally, you're kind of worried about what's going to happen work-wise. Are you going to do this? Are you going to, what's going to happen? Like, I mean, I don't know. I still haven't made any plans or anything like that. I've started to actively kind of look for more publishers for the book. I've started to, you know, look at maybe ways and means that I can start, you know, working on my experience to monetize it in some way down the line, because I'm going to have to. You know, I'm practically unemployable, I'd imagine. So, you know, I got to do that. Yeah, that'd be the main kind of worry or thing that I found most hard to come to terms with, you know. That and the gossip. Like, there's always people that, oh, he's out fully, what's he doing? You know, all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, that's just water off a duck's back to me, you know, at this stage. I've developed a rather thick skin when it comes to that kind of shit. Yeah, look, I mean, any of that kind of stuff is deserved at the end of the day, you know. I did what I did. The reasons behind it, maybe people mightn't understand. But the fact is that I did do the things I did. So, you know, you got to expect some bit of kickback. But I wake up positive, you know. I mean, every day is different. I'm not waking up in jail. So that's the main thing.
Later that same day, after I got home from Limerick, I got a text from Pat to say that he'd been offered a book deal.
Hello?
Hey, Pat.
Hi, how you doing?
Tell me the news.
Like I sent you this morning, I'd been sending out a few more and contacted a few more publishers directly or whatever, but Gil came back to me and they told me that they were interested. Basically, they want to put it on their spring catalogue next year. So it's what I wanted, to be honest with you. Like, I'm excited, I'm looking forward to it, I'm happy with it. It's not something to be overly excited about, but I mean, at the same time, there is a certain amount of satisfaction to having it published now and getting it out there, because I think there's a message in it that people need to hear, you know, in relation to gambling and where it can bring you.
All right.
Okay.
I'll be talking to you. Congratulations again.
Thanks. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Everything really started to happen very quickly around then. Like, it was only a few days after all this that we were down in Limerick spying on him.
Oh, it's okay, so he told you a lie?
Yeah.
Okay, that's bizarre. He's definitely lied. He's lied flat out to there.
We knew from the start that Pat saw his book and this podcast as two important steps in his efforts to rehabilitate himself. He was claiming, basically, that he changed, that he'd put his bad behaviour behind him, and that he was sincerely remorseful for his actions. And he was coming to the table with an open and honest story to tell about addiction and recovery. He was lifting the lid on his gambling and his scamming so that others could learn from his experiences. When Pat lied to us, it mattered not just because he deceived us, but because he was trying to position himself as an expert on gambling addiction, an authority worthy of respect, despite his long history of wrongdoing. I kept thinking of something he'd said in one of our very first interviews.
And writing that book was, I can't describe the amount of shit that just literally I felt like washing off me when I was doing it.
It was like the sins of his past were being washed away and he would be left clean at the end of it all. He was looking for redemption and we were there to help him get it. But we had become very worried that he was only telling part of his story, and anything that might interfere with his new identity was being left out or glossed over. We only had his word to go on then, and that didn't feel like enough. That's why we wanted to talk to his friends and his family, why we pushed him for documentation, photographs, receipts, bank statements, the boxes of records from the gambling companies, anything at all to back up his story. None of that was forthcoming. By the end of the summer, we really didn't know if we could believe anything he was telling us. And if he was lying to us about small things, how could we trust him on the big things? Had he really come to terms with the hurt and damage he caused other people? Was he really ready to be the go-to guy on gambling addiction? I mean, we weren't really sure if he'd even had a gambling addiction. We'd seen no proof of it, and we'd heard nothing from anyone else to back it up. What if all of this, the book, the podcast, was just another story Pat was spinning? What if coming clean was Pat's biggest scam of all?
After we'd caught Pat lying to us, we knew we'd have to go back through everything he told us. We needed to check every story for inconsistencies, for gaps, for things that sounded too good to be true. We needed to talk to his victims and to go into detail with him about parts of his story that he hadn't, until then, been so willing to talk about. We met again in Limerick about a month later. The mood wasn't good. We went through Pat's list of convictions with him, trying to piece together a timeline and to get an understanding of what lay behind each day in court. By the time we started to ask about the stories we'd heard from his victims, Pat really wasn't happy.
Can we pause this just for a second, yeah? Can we? I need to talk to you about something, right? And it's entirely up to you what way kind of you give me an answer on this or not, but I started out doing this with you thinking, and I understand the whole concept of a podcast like this. It's not to me making me out to be a fantastic person or anything like that or whatever. So, like, I've no problem doing this, It's something that I wanted to do. I said it to you from day one. But if it's just going to be, you know, if it's just going to be something that's just going to destroy me, like, I need to know.
I don't think either of us have any interest in destroying you.
No.
Yeah, okay, and that's fair enough. But, like, you have to see this from my point of view. I don't know where I'm at. My head's fucking wrecked for the last few weeks on this. You know, I'm getting nothing from this at all. And I knew that going in, and I'm not looking for anything from it. You know, but the whole reason I did this was because I thought at the time, you know, that it was going to help me with a book. It was going to run kind of parallel with a book. And that's what I still think it should be. But if it's a thing that's going to fuck up the credibility of a book or affect it or impact it, then I have a big problem.
But like, literally the only reason it would interfere with the book is if you've been, like, dishonest with us.
Right, well, I haven't.
Then you've got nothing to worry about.
Yeah, look, I don't know.
You said at the beginning of this that it was the most honest thing you'd ever done, and we took that in face value. We are now going through the nitty-gritty of some of that stuff, and there is some inconsistencies that have come up over the course of the interviews, and we're going to ask you about them, because we wouldn't be doing our job without doing that. You know, and it's not okay to ask people to sit down and listen to so many hours of your story without, you know, it's not okay to just say, I did that, but it was only a small thing and I moved on. We have to kind of dig into these things and question why they were being done.
Do you promise me that this is just going to be not a complete and utter fucking sledging job?
Well, you're happy with what you've told us. You're happy with what you've said.
Yeah.
You've told us the truth.
Yeah.
All the way along.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's all we can ask.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The ESRI estimates that 1 in 30 adults in Ireland suffer from a problem gambling, spending an average of €1,000 a month. However, a recovering gambling addict reveals in a new book that he gambled away nearly €1 million in the bookies, and he was sentenced to prison for the cons that he pulled to feed his addiction. He's now been released from prison, where he reflected on his actions and wrote a book, 100 to 1, subtitled The True Story of a Compulsive Gambler. Pat Sheedy, good morning and welcome.
Pat's book, 100 to 1, was published in February 2024.
His compulsive gambling led to 100 convictions.
Pat Sheedy, you are very welcome to the show. Thank
morning,
you so
Pat.
Much for joining us.
In the weeks before and after publication, Pat appeared on numerous local and national radio shows and on national TV to promote the book.
Pat Sheedy, good afternoon. You're welcome.
Thanks, Brendan. Good afternoon.
Will we start at the beginning?
In each interview, the story was much the same. Pat had been a con man and a gambler for most of his life. Eventually, he'd ended up in prison. Now he was in recovery, he'd atoned for his sins, and he was ready to tell his story openly and honestly. More than that, he was ready to warn about the dangers of the gambling industry. Very few people questioned that narrative.
In the last number of months, as editor of the Sunday Independent, I was contacted by a publisher for his book.
This is Alan English. We heard from him a few episodes back when he told us about meeting Pat in Limerick in the late 1980s as a young court reporter working for the local newspaper there.
And they said, you might be interested in this. So then they said his name was Pat Sheedy. And I said, oh, Pat Sheedy from Limerick. So I said, I'll definitely read that, you know. So they sent on a copy of the manuscript, which I read. My gut instinct was there was something not quite right about it. But then the journalist in me was saying, and the editor in me was saying, it's a cracking story. People would be very interested in it, even though he has so many victims out there. He comes across as being remorseful to some extent. And of course, the big story in the book is that it was the gambling that basically made him do it, you know. And I thought, well, you know, everybody's entitled to a second chance in life, and maybe he has turned himself around. So I made a decision to go with it, and then about 3 hours later, I changed my mind, and I actually thought back to that time in the office in Limerick in 1989, and thought, I actually feel I could be, am I being conned again here, you know? And so that was the reason why I decided not to go with it, you know? I haven't met the guy since that day, but my instinct was from reading it, yes, he has clearly got a problem with gambling. But my personal opinion, it's too easy and out for him to sort of say, it was the gambling that sort of, you know, led me to con all these people. I had to keep feeding the beast. And I just felt it was too convenient an explanation for all of the stuff that he did, you know. And I just felt an instant surge of, that's the right decision, you know. Even though, you know, you felt you could have done something with it, and it's an interesting story, and, you know, he's entitled to tell his story. Everybody's entitled to tell their story. But is the story authentic? That's the question. And that's where my doubt was.
After the book was published, we met Pat again. It was the first time we'd all sat down together for 6 months. We'd been following the book's publication closely and recognised many of the stories Pat was now telling in the media. At the same time, none of our doubts had gone away. We still had nothing but Pat's word to go on, and we still didn't think he was being completely honest with us or with anyone about his life and what he'd done to people over the years. Something was missing, and we couldn't let it go.
Which I suppose really is the heart of everything, that you have to talk about the good and the bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't really like when anybody brings up the bad.
Would you? I mean, I don't think anybody likes it.
No, but I get the impression that you kind of can take it very personally, that it's not just somebody doing their job, they're going outside of that, they're getting at you personally.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's how it makes me feel afterwards is the thing. It makes me feel like shit. It's how it makes me feel. It's how I internalise things. And I suppose it brings up memories for me. It brings up things for me that I don't want to really be there, but they are there and I have to accept it.
But you understand that to tell your story, you can't just tell one bit of it without the other.
Yeah, I do.
You're coming to the nation to tell them your story, you know, flaws and all.
Yeah.
So you do have to go to places that are uncomfortable.
But I have gone there. I didn't shy away from any questions I was asked. Just don't like the answers, and that's my issue. That's my issue with me.
I'm not sure you have gone there, really. You'll talk at length about things you want to talk about and things that are probably more positive in your story. And you'll talk very much at length about the gambling addiction and your understanding of it and all the rest of it, but you do not and will not go to the other place, which is the scams and the frauds and what happened, and you very quickly brush over them.
I don't think I do, but like I said, if I had to be talking to you about all of them, like I said, we could be here till 2030. I know that I've done a whole host of terrible things. I can't keep repeating them to myself and to others. They're there. They can't go away. They're done. I've been honest with the questions that I've been asked in the interviews about the scams that I pulled. And there are things that I'm not prepared to discuss with anyone, and you can call that dishonesty, you can call it whatever you want, but there are things that are private to me that I won't discuss with people, end story. And if that's the kind of thing you're looking for, I'm afraid that'll probably never be forthcoming.
We probably came to this story with an idea in mind about what it was, which is the story that you present in the book, the story that you told us. And we still feel that is a very valuable story to tell, and we intend to tell it because we think, you know, gambling addiction is a very serious issue and we want to cover that. We think rehabilitation, prison, the judicial system, these are serious issues that we want to cover. And we think your story and the way that you tell it allows us to do that. That's very valuable and something that we want to do in depth. I guess the feeling for me anyway has often just been, you know, a growing concern that I don't have a handle on the story fully and that basically I have to take it on faith all the time.
Yeah, but you're screwed then because I'm not trustworthy.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, this is why I've been pushing you over time to bring other people in, to bring in evidence of anything you can find, even just photographs, you know, just things that will back up the things that you tell me, because the more I can believe, the more I can stand over, the less I have to have faith purely on your word, which, as you say, like, I'd be
kind of ridiculous to, to, you know, bet everything on that. So like the feeling that has certainly developed over me, for me over the summer throughout last year, was just this concern I had that I wasn't getting the full picture and that therefore I was being sort of manipulated in some way.
I definitely wasn't manipulating.
You're obviously well aware of like your reputation. Like, why haven't you made a bigger effort to bring in backup or evidence in any way? Because that would solve a lot of my problems, you know.
I've tried on a couple of occasions to get my friends in. It just didn't work. As for photographs, I'm not really a photograph kind of a person.
There were some of the bank statements. There was the box of stuff in the prisons. There was the, you know, the data files from Paddy Power, and we saw nothing.
I don't have them anymore.
I know you said.
So I can't produce something for you that I don't have. And when I contacted them again, which I did, to get them, they'll no longer speak to me because my accounts are no longer active. That's the policy that they have.
Okay, so that's just one thing. I'm, you know what I mean? I'm just throwing in another couple of things that were...
Yeah, it's more a pattern.
It's a collective that nothing was produced.
I mean, can you see why we've ended up in that position of just wanting more? You can get why it's hard for us to trust you on faith.
I fully get why it's hard for you to trust me.
And do you get why having other people talk to us, even in your presence, like we didn't ask to meet them alone, we went, you know, with you, would help that? Because then we'd be able to feel like we have a more truthful foundation on which to build this story. And in the absence of that, what happened for us was just the sense of like, there's this vacuum here that I can't get at. And therefore I just can't trust what you're saying. And that led me down like places I just did not really want to go, you know, because it's very like, and I'm sure you've heard this from many people in your life, it is really exhausting and stressful to be in a situation where you are questioning someone else all the time. And like, I've had people in my life with addiction problems. I've seen this kind of thing before. I am predisposed to accept your explanation for it. But at the same time, I'm sitting there going, I don't know if this is true. I don't know if I can stand over this. I don't know if I'm being used for the sake of getting your story out there because of what it's going to bring you. Because there's a benefit here for you too.
Okay.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't really. Like, I genuinely didn't understand the importance of speaking to my friends and things like that. I didn't understand the significance or the importance of it. Okay.
Do you remember back in September, we were due to meet your friends?
Yeah.
On a Saturday?
Yeah.
And then you called me, I think, on a Thursday to say that it wasn't going to be possible because you had to attend a prison course all day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you attend that prison course?
Did you?
All day?
Yep. Not morning, 9 to 1.
I mean, that's not what you told me at the time, though.
Yeah, but it was a 9 to 1 thing.
I don't think that's true, though.
Again, if... Like, I can only tell you what I've done. I can't make you believe me. So we can keep dancing around the same things all the time where you just don't believe a word I say.
Well, I'll tell you why I don't believe this one. Because we were in Limerick that day anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw you.
I doubt that very much. Not between 9 and 1, you didn't.
We did, though.
Where?
First time I was waiting for a bus at about 11, half 11. On the street.
Where?
Near the prison somewhere. I can't remember. I don't know the names of the streets in Limerick.
Right.
You took a bus.
You didn't take the bus from there because
you walked down from there. You took the bus from there home.
You took a bus from around the corner of the Savoy out to Moira's.
Well, I know that I fulfilled every course that I was told to do by probation and prison service at that time.
Okay, so at that time you told us you were there all day.
Okay.
Okay. But you weren't.
Okay.
And later in the day, later in the evening, you repeated your version of events.
I called you on the phone. I asked you how you got on. You said it was grand. I asked you what you did. You told me all about it. I asked you how long it went on for, and you said you got out 2 or 3 o'clock. I asked you, did you catch any of the match? Because it was an Ireland rugby match on at the time. And you said you got home in time to see the end of it.
I doubt that.
I have it on tape, Pat.
Okay.
Like, and I know you were at home because I was
parked up the road from your house. I saw you walk in.
Somebody went on the bus with you.
I can't remember that.
Well, I can.
Okay.
Because it wasn't helpful at the time when you're already feeling a little bit unsure of what somebody's telling you and whether everything is exactly as it seems, and then to catch somebody in such a clear and obvious. Do you understand what that, how that makes somebody feel when they, when you tell them something that's maybe not quite true? Wasn't totally, wasn't a huge, big, massive big lie. Wasn't a kind of a make or break things lie, but it was a big lie. And, you know, when you're already doubting somebody and then you get evidence that that's not exactly true, the chain of events isn't true, you know, your whereabouts weren't true, your excuse for not meeting us wasn't true, it just casts everything into doubt then. And it makes us feel like, you know, is this the reason why you didn't want to bring your friends that day to the meeting? We were already, we had cleared the days, cleared everything. Or was there another reason you didn't want to bring them? Why were you telling a lie about your unavailability?
I wasn't telling a lie about my unavailability.
Well, you were. You categorically were. We had eyes on you. You were telling lies. And you repeated the lie. You told a lie to begin with, at the beginning of the day, and you repeated the lie at the end of the day in quite detailed terms. You were able to create a day that had not occurred with a cast of characters and things that happened that hadn't happened. And this was at a time that we were putting a huge amount of time and effort into working with you. So as you could, for the first time in your life, you told us you were going to tell the truth. And it was the most honest thing you'd done, was the book and this podcast.
See, is there any point in us continuing this then? Because no matter what I say to you, you're not going to believe.
Well, you can just, you can tell us, you can at least respond to what we've just said. Like, I mean, explain, like, what were you doing? What was going through your head? Why was it something that you felt okay at doing?
At the time, I don't know. I was just having huge reservations about the whole thing. I suppose I didn't have the balls to tell you. And you can smile all you want. You're quite intimidating. I'm not saying you're smiling now, but what I'm saying is you'll probably smile. You're quite intimidating. And part of me is sorry that I'm doing this at all. And part of me wants to do it. And part of me doesn't want to do it. And I don't know. I suppose I was worried as well that my friends and my family were going to be hauled over the coals. And I know that you can say that you're doing it for whatever reasons. That's not the way I saw it. That's not the way I thought it was going to happen. And this is just down to me, right? This is just the way I am around things like this. And I don't know.
Do you understand the position that put us in?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
What do you think it was?
Cast huge doubt on everything that I said to you prior to that, I suppose.
That was the last time the three of us sat down together. We've spoken a couple of times on Zoom since then, but only briefly, and only about the plans for getting this podcast out. There have been no more interviews.
We left Limerick that day with no real assurance that Pat was willing to be honest with us. When confronted with evidence of his dishonesty, he shut down. He literally went silent, clammed up, wouldn't engage. Since then, we've carried on trying to tell his story in as balanced and even a way as possible. We still believe, as we did at the outset, that there is a real need to talk about gambling addiction and the damage it does to people's lives. There is a need for greater understanding of that addiction and the effects it has on people's mental health. But also, we wanted to understand what drove Pat to do this, to engage with us on this podcast, to write a book, to go out and tell his story, despite all the holes in it, despite all the people out there who still felt wronged by him, despite the risk of being found out.
I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and we were talking about Pat and about this podcast, and he said something to me that really made sense. He said that gamblers want to lose. They feel disaster and chaos are appropriate outcomes for them. But rather than actively or directly bring about that disaster, they create environments where it naturally arises. They won't just go and hurt themselves. they'll create some situation that can't but fall apart on them.
This is kind of like what Colin O'Gara was saying before about juggling all these balls, trying to keep everything in the air, and then it all comes crashing down at once.
Exactly. And for most people, when they find themselves in that kind of situation, it's a disaster when things come crashing down. That's the outcome you're trying to avoid. But for an addict like Pat, it's perhaps that moment which matters most, because it's what you are after all along. It's what you think you deserve. As my friend put it, there's something that feels right in the universe when things fall apart.
This is why Pat makes things worse, even when he has a chance to make them better. This is why he lied to us when we were trying to talk to his friends and family, who I believe would have painted him in much softer light than the people we ended up speaking to. It's why he let Margaret and her friends go to the Champions League final in Madrid, and why he kept stringing her along for months afterwards. In his head, he's saying to himself, well, I'll sort them out eventually. I'll get it all straightened out. It'll all be fine.
But somewhere deep down, he knows that's not going to happen. And everything he's doing to prolong the issue is only going to make the final collapse all that more extreme and more catastrophic, which is what he wants, subconsciously, all the time. That's the demon he's fighting, not gambling necessarily, but this self-destructive urge that's in his head telling him, you're a scumbag, you're worthless, you lie, you cheat, you steal, people don't like you, people don't respect you. You might as well lean into it. You deserve to be despised. And when it all goes wallop, as it must, the voice is there going, see, I told you so.
And you know, when he's in a good place, he can't hear that voice. He can just go about his day as a relatively normal person. When things are bad, he can't hear anything else.
And I wonder how loud that voice has been in his head over the last year or two. Between ourselves, we've talked about the book and the podcast being potentially Pat's biggest scam of all, going public with his story in order to reap the rewards of turning your life around, the attention, the kudos, maybe even the money. But it's a crazy risk to take.
If this goes wrong, if this comes crashing down, then the effects are going to be devastating. He won't be able to try this again. He's got one shot at it. And so you wonder, what is that voice in his head saying? How much of that self-destructive voice is he hearing right now?
Last month, almost 2 years into knowing Pat, and just a week before the first episodes of this podcast went out, we heard rumors of something that, if it was true, would validate many of our fears about Pat's story.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, all right. Now, a bit of news for you.
Oh.
So, I was just speaking to somebody. I can't really go into exact details, but it looks as if our boy Pat is in trouble again. There seems to have been some complaints made that he has taken money or defrauded somebody he's working with at the moment. Now, I'm getting it through a source who has been informed of it, basically. What are we now, a week from launching the podcast? So exactly what we were worried about.
Yeah.
You know, when he was kind of reinventing himself and getting involved with various charities and whatever else. I mean, sure, it was open season for him if he went back to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously it was something we were worried about. I'm just surprised that it's happened, if it has happened, you know, so quickly.
It's not great news for him if that's coming down the road, because of course he said the last place he ever wanted to be was back in prison, and you can be sure if he gets another conviction, that's exactly where he's headed.
So we've been hearing stories. Some of them came to us in the run-up to this podcast appearing, and ever since the episode started going out, we've had people getting in touch to tell us about their interactions with Pat over the years. They're mostly small scams, amounts of money not getting paid back, the usual patterns. But some have been more concerning, not because they involve huge amounts of money, but because they've been happening since Pat got out of prison. And they display all the hallmarks of the schemes Pat was involved in before he got locked up. We've heard stories about fake names being used, fake emails, fake conferences, all leading back to Pat. People who trusted him, who backed him, and his story of recovery have been betrayed. We've been told that institutions he's worked with since his release, state institutions, will no longer deal with him. We've heard he's been on dating sites using an assumed name. We've even had a few dodgy-looking emails ourselves, and while we can't say for sure where they've come from, we obviously have our suspicions. And just the other week, there was a report in the Sunday Independent about Pat and a Garda investigation into these recent activities. I'll just read from the piece, which is written by Ali Bracken. Serial conman Pat Sheedy is under investigation over claims that he defrauded an organisation by impersonating a senior aide to President Michael D. Higgins. The fraudster, who has over 100 criminal convictions, is now the focus of a Garda probe into an alleged fake trip to Norway to inspect prisons. Now, we don't know where that investigation will end up, but when you take it all together, the signs aren't what you'd hope to see for a man supposedly in recovery, trying to present himself as an expert on gambling addiction.
From what we know, it appears that he has abused the position he gained through the publication of his book, and in doing so, made life so much more difficult for people who are genuinely in recovery, genuinely trying to turn their lives around. His ego, his need to be seen a certain way, has led him to use the very real problems that addicts face as a way to launder his reputation and wash himself clean. Or worse, as a way to earn back the trust that would allow him to scam others in the future. It's terrible to think that our suspicions may have been confirmed, and to feel manipulated, like we've been lied to and used. But I imagine that's a feeling we share with many people who have encountered Pat over the years.
For all that, we still have no interest in destroying Pat or his reputation. People continue to be hurt by his actions, his callousness, his lack of empathy and understanding, his inability to make amends. But no one does the things he does without a real and very serious illness at the root of it. As frustrated as we have been in our attempts to understand his actions and tell his story in full, we have to acknowledge that he can't help himself when it comes to deception and dishonesty. The self-sabotage is chronic, and it will take a lot of work and care and help for him to get that under control.
So again, I'm coming back to the humility piece of Gamblers Anonymous, the 12 steps.
You'll remember Colin O'Gara, head of addiction services at St. John of God's Hospital in Dublin.
Knowing what you can control and what you can't, and having, you know, the ability to come from your perch of thinking that you can beat the house and beat everything and set up all sorts of schemes, that you could come from that, you have to come down off that perch and develop humility. And that's a huge, it's called, that process is called surrendering, really. And that is it's a real watershed moment in recovery. And it can be very difficult to get people to that point, particularly men in that situation. But again, can be done.
We can't say where Pat's path in life will take him next. I doubt he knows either. Our hope now is still what it was, right at the beginning of our journey with him, that people will learn something about the nature of addiction and mental illness from all of this. It's not the story of redemption and triumph over adversity that Pat probably wanted at the start, but it can still be a story with impact, a story that wakes people up to the reality of gambling addiction, the consequences it has for people who suffer in this way, and the people around them. That's why we kept going with this, right to the end. Because there's still a chance that someone will hear it and think, I know someone like that. Maybe something will have been said that will click with someone out there, and they'll understand someone in their life better than they did before. Maybe their life will get better because of it. Right now, that's about as much as we can hope for.
The Gambler is produced and presented by Nicola Tallant and me, Ian Nalini. The executive producer for Go Loud is Owen Brennan, and Darren Cleary is the commissioning editor for Go Loud. Sound design is by Neil Kavanagh. The Go Loud promotion design and video team for The Gambler is Roisin Riley, Siobhan Walsh, Cameron Rooney, Andrew McConnell, and Dara Murphy. Legal support was from Mars Solicitors. If you have been affected by any of the issues raised in this series, you can contact Gambling Care on 1800 936 725 or visit gamblingcare.ie.